Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. This is an empowering hour. I can promise you that there will be an enormous amount of material that you will hear during the next 60 minutes that will allow you to make healthier, better choices. I'm broadcasting live from our studio in New York City. This is the one program each week that we set aside where there's only health, nutrition, and healing information. Unless, of course, you ask a question or share an issue that involves something else that you find important. No guest, no commentaries. That'll be tomorrow. In fact, tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., I do the Progressive Commentary Hour, right now the most downloaded program I know of in all of radio. Almost 145,000 separate individuals downloaded it last week when I did my 9/11 3.5-hour special. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk about the prison industrial privatized system. And you will learn so much that you didn't know. It'll be a 2-hour special. But for now, all good things. And throughout the entire hour, you can call in, make your comments, ask questions, share your opinion. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And I'll be taking the calls rather nonstop as they come in. Plus, I have a lot of stuff I'm going to share with you. Also, I just want to say thank you to all of you who showed up at 4 separate rallies yesterday, and these were each different movements, and this was very important because it shows that people are willing to go through some discomfort, to go different places, that walk to Washington, D.C. I'll be going back out. I was out there today, started yesterday from Brooklyn, Prospect Park, protesting genetic engineering and the lack of labeling of what is genetically engineered. And then later, over on the west side, protesting the nuclear reactors and trying to close them down, then down to Wall Street. A lot went on yesterday, but there were a lot of people, thousands of people joined me, so I thank all of you for that. Now to our health and nutrition segment. First up, happy genes create optimistic people. I'll quote this. This is a study in biological psychiatry. Here's what it says. Scientists have found that some people are born optimists because they inherited a happy gene. The findings may help to explain why some people are always miserable while others tend to look on the bright side. Professor Lane Cox of Essex University showed that more than 100 positive and negative pictures on a computer screen, such as growling dogs and smiling children, and they found that when you check the DNA of the individual and a specific version of 5-HTTLPR gene, and this is what's known as the feel-good, and it helps create the chemical serotonin. So we inherit different genes, and then we have to go over to the work of the great molecular biologist, Dr. Bruce Lipton, because it was Lipton who had one important piece of this puzzle. And that was that it's called epigenetics, that you literally become, at your DNA level, the energy, and with the energy is the message. The message is always in life encoded in energy. You become the energy of the people or environment that you're living in. Now, that's one piece of a puzzle. Put that together with this, that when we have happy parents, loving parents, optimistic parents, joyful, okay, we got a problem, but we've got solutions for that problem, parents, that impacts your DNA, your gene. Now, take the two together. Bruce Lipton, we become the energy of the environment we're in, and that the people in our lives who have positive genes can pass those genes on to us. That means then we're more optimistic, we're more solution-oriented. Now, here's where I really believe the first and I question the second. Because I've seen people who've had happy parents who were not happy people, optimistic parents who were not optimistic. I've seen enough of them in my life to know that that's something I would challenge. On the other hand, I have seen a great many times where adults act out and you say, why are you saying that? Why are you doing that? What do you think the likely outcome is going to be if you keep saying and doing things? And yet, in a reasoned moment where they do not feel threats, they'll say, yeah, that was kind of stupid, I did that. Yeah, not just a little, a lot. But it's when they continue to recycle over and over and over again. Not only do you do the same thing over and over again, but the justification in their minds is the same. And almost always they're blaming you or someone else for why they're acting out. They never take responsibility and just say, I'm one big screw-up, and you're right, and I don't want to be around me. No one should be around me until I get my act together. But they never do that. I believe this. And I'll try to make this just as basic and simple as possible. None of us have perfect parents, because there are no perfect people. But if we were fortunate enough to be around parents who cared about us in a good way, gave us a chance to see who we were and to evolve our own unique personalities and beliefs without over-parenting, without over-controlling, without over-manipulating. And also when we made mistakes, allow us to learn from those mistakes instead of punishing us, calling us an idiot or stupid, or statements that we didn't know how to understand the statement. Sometimes if you're given negative comments and negative reinforcement as a child, you take it personally. And sometimes that's the only kind of love that you're exposed to, a toxic love. Which is not really love, but a toxic emotion that we perceive as love. Well, guess what you're going to do? At some point in life, you're going to challenge back when you get old enough to, and then you're giving back to your parents what they gave you, and then you take that outside of the home, and you start giving it to other people. But the other people didn't do anything wrong with you. They didn't hurt you. They didn't demean you. They didn't degrade you. So why should you degrade or demean other people? That's the epigenetics of Bruce. That's what he did. Bruce Levine was the first person ever to actually prove we become the energy of the people we associate with, which now on the other end means, okay, we didn't come from the best background, and we may have had some warped perceptions about what's real and what's moral, what's ethical and what's not. Can we change it? And the answer is, yes, we can. How do we do that? How do we go from being a selfish, narcissistic, self-absorbed person to one that is loving, selfless, and caring? But not on an intellectual level. Everyone thinks they're better than what they are on an intellectual level. They can talk, but do they actualize it? I can't tell you how many people, oh, Gary, you know, I'm going to come out one day and, you know, join one of those things, but they don't. But that doesn't mean they don't think about it. But thinking doesn't do diddly squat. You know, boy, isn't it bad there's so many poor people? Yeah, do anything to help them? I'm going to, you know, when circumstances change, but it never gets to change it. So what we have to do first and foremost is stop living by the lies of the story that we tell ourselves and other people. We put so much energy into mastering our own stories. And hence, we continue to master our illusions of who we are. Who we are in our story is the person we want the world to love, to honor. But what if we're not that person? And most people are not. So how do we change that? How do we get out of this game? A couple ways. One, take time off. Isolate yourself completely. We all need this respite where we're alone with nature and ourselves, and we come to grips with our insecurities, our fears, our limitations. In effect, we really reveal our dark side. Don't deny it, don't dismiss it, don't apologize for it, don't make excuse for it, just let it be what it is, because it's never going to change. You can't change the message that's in your DNA. It's there. That's why psychotherapy can certainly make us more aware, in a good way, of some of our habits and behavior, especially if we're unconscious of it, and how it impacts other people, but it can't change it. That brings part two. The only way you can change a defective personality, negativity, narcissism, greed, selfishness, self-absorption, is you must have the spiritual discipline to master conscious choices that have a positive outcome for other people, not just yourself. And then look at what you want to have happen, focus upon how it can happen, look for the tools of making it happen, and then make it work. And then every time you do that, you create a new message in the DNA. And surround yourself with positive people, optimistic people, honest people, ethical people. Create a new community of friends and associates, which means that you may have to say goodbye to many of those people you've had in your life who are continuing to share the epigenetics of cynicism, epigenetics of bitterness, epigenetics of emotional violence. And that's painful, and it's hard, because those people become a part of our DNA. But unless you want to change, all right, or don't want to change, you've got to separate. There's plenty of good people in this world, wonderful human beings in this world, but how are you going to know who they are if you're not willing to change? So now they've found that, you know, optimism. But now think about what you can do to other people and what you become to other people when you're optimistic, when they see you doing something. Then you impact them at the DNA level. Now it just makes sense if you're going to have a child and you have focused upon keeping to the positive nature in you, then you are imparting positive messages into the DNA. And hence, the developing fetus is being connected to your higher spiritual being. And then when you begin to evolve, you're evolving in a more holistic and healthy manner. Next up, this is from Paul Fassa of Natural News. He's talking about a food I happen to like, and that's arugula. In fact, just yesterday I was at the farmer's market, and I took some time to... Actually, it was on Friday, and I bought some arugula, but I bought the baby arugula, which is much sweeter than the larger leaf arugula. The larger the leaf gets, the more bitter it becomes until it's a pure bitter, which still is good for you, especially if you have any gastrointestinal problems or parasites. But if you want a sweet arugula, you want it very small, almost like a microgreen. Now, why arugula? Well, turns out it's very high in chlorophyll, and remember, I've said it many times, chlorophyll molecules are very similar to our red blood cells. A major difference is that iron atoms are at the center of blood cell molecules, while plant chlorophyll centers contain magnesium atoms. And there are about 300 metabolic processes in the body that require magnesium. And that's why you really should get your 800 to 1200 milligrams of magnesium each day. So when you are, I don't recommend cooking arugula. I don't like the way it tastes when it's cooked. It gets all kind of mushy. It's much better in salad. But what it does is this. Arugula is great in salads. It's great in pestos. The intact chlorophyll helps prevent DNA and liver damage from aflatoxins, which sometimes can end up from peanuts or corn products. And it also has vitamin K, which is very important for you, because vitamin K helps for bone absorption of calcium, and you need that. But also, arugula does some good things in your area of fiber and digestion. It's rich in B complex, and it has sulfur. And that sulfur helps detoxify the liver and allows the liver to create more glutathione. And more glutathione is the master antioxidant that is created by the liver to help the whole body. So arugula is a superfood. Now, for those people who are trying to have children, make sure that you detoxify for at least a year before you have a planned pregnancy. I realize you can't do that if you have an unplanned pregnancy. Why? Because pesticides build up in your body and they're passed on to the developing fetus. And the latest research from environmental health perspectives shows that any pesticides at all can change the IQ capacity of your child. It negatively impacts a child's learning ability. Their IQs tend to be lower, and the greater the umbilical cord pesticide blood levels, the lower your child's IQ. So detoxifying, and what do you detoxify with? Chelation therapy, and lots of sulfur, garlic, onions, all good. Now, for those of you exercising, and this morning was in Central Park doing a long workout, there was a bike, a biathlon. Part of that's biking, the other part's running. And I'm watching how many gears they have. Well, I believe you only use one gear, the strongest resistant gear. So it really is tough pedaling, because that's when you're really pushing the cells and you're teaching the cells what it's like to resist, and therefore they get stronger, more dynamic cells. Now Science Daily has come up with research that actually supports this. Quote, cycling fast, vigorous daily exercise recommended for longer life. Quote, a study conducted among cyclists in Copenhagen, Denmark, showed that it is the relative intensity, that's that high-level intensity, and not the duration of cycling, which is the most important in relation to all-cause death, and even more pronounced for coronary heart disease death. So what they're saying in lay language is, if you pump those legs and arms in one heavy gear, especially up and down hills, you're going to live a longer life. And for, I am a believer that you shouldn't be having dairy. Now, here's what Science Daily says about it from the European Respiratory Society. Low-fat yogurt intake when pregnant linked to increased risk of child asthma and hay fever. So if you eat low-fat yogurt while you're pregnant, you can increase the risk of your child developing asthma and allergic rhinitis or hay fever, according to this study. And also, one more, and then I'll, well, our phone calls are filling up there. I'm opposed to nanotechnology because we don't know what they do. We haven't done any of these long-term important studies. This is from the Society of Experimental Biology. Here's what it says, University of Plymouth. For the first time in an animal study, nanoparticles have a detrimental effect on the brain and other parts of the central nervous system. Quote, the subjected rainbow trout to titanium oxide nanoparticles, which are widely used as a whitening agent in many products, including paints, some personal care products, like toothpaste, and they found that it caused vacuoles or holes to form in parts of the brain and for nerve cells in the brain to die. So we don't want nanoparticles, yet the FDA is for them. But then again, the FDA is for a lot of things they shouldn't be. One last thing. Walnuts are shown to boost cognitive function. This was a very important study done at Andrews University in Michigan. It says, true or false, walnuts can improve the odds of correctly answering a true or false question. The answer is true. According to new research published in the British Journal of Nutrition, And the study showed that walnuts are very powerful food and help increase inferential reasoning, specifically the ability to discover truth from false. So eat your walnuts. I suggest, maybe a handful of walnuts a day. And you can throw them into a smoothie, you can throw them into a hot cereal, but get your walnuts. And you can even cook your brown rice, and after it's cooked and when it's ready to serve, stir in walnuts. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment with your calls on any topic you would like to address. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm broadcasting and video streaming live from our studio in New York City, and while our new studio is being built, and it will be on the size and scope of a Fox Network studio. It's going to be magnificent. We have a 2,000 square foot room with 25 foot high ceilings, so it's going to be really nice when this studio gets built. And it's being built now. Now we're broadcasting from our small studio, but you can watch it going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Let's say hello to Kevin from California. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is regarding my mother's eye problem. For the past 7 years, once or twice a month, or recently more frequently, her right eye and sometimes both eyes become very red and somewhat painful. The diagnosis she was given was by some doctors was eye choroiditis, and for that she was given a steroid eye drop. And for the past year, a doctor diagnosed it as infection and has prescribed two antibiotics that she has to use for 1 week when the redness comes. And she also has to use baby shampoo to wash her eye every day. Just want to say that she has been supplementing very heavily for the past 2 years and has, you know, eliminated red meat, any kind of meat from her diet. Now, we don't know what the underlying problem is, and we were wondering what she could do to get rid of it.
Okay, I don't believe that you should look at just the eye condition. Any time that you have any of the itises, ileitis, colitis, you're dealing with a local inflammatory condition that also could be systemic. How I would approach it is not to look just at the eye, but rather start with, my mother has an inflammation in her body. The question is, how many inflammations are there? Now, the most common places for inflammation are in the mouth, in undiagnosed abscesses or infections, or infected teeth, and in the gastrointestinal tract, where then a lot of your immune system is diverted in order to trap any pathogen that goes from the intestine into the body. Then, if you have had any high-level allergic reactions, let's say your mother might be allergic to dairy but develops a tolerance. The fact that you can tolerate something doesn't mean it's good for you or that you're not having a reaction. It's no different than cigarette smoking. The first time you smoke, you're going to cough and hack. But in time, you actually create an adaptive ability where the body adapts to the inflammation. Same way with alcohol. It doesn't mean it's good. It means you've adapted, but you're paying a price for it. So why don't you put your mother on a full course detoxification? It will take about 6 months. And that means your mother can have no dairy, no meat, no chicken, no farm-raised fish, no fried foods, no bread, no caffeine in any form, no artificial sweeteners, no processed sugars. None at all. Now, does your mother have any of the things I just mentioned all on her diet? Yes? No?
Yes.
She does.
Well,
okay.
She does.
All right.
Like green tea would count as well?
No, that doesn't, because the caffeine in green tea is neutralized by the theanine, which is also in it.
Sure.
But she does have some of the other pro-inflammatory items, correct?
Correct.
Okay, well, what that means is that at a certain point, the body begins a tipping. Now, how long have you been hearing me on the radio?
For 5 years now.
Okay, do you listen every Wednesday morning for 6 hours on KPFK in Los Angeles?
I actually download all of your shows from my iPod, so I listen to all of them.
Okay, good. Well, then I've got 14 hours of live broadcasting a week, so you got a lot to select from. But through all of those, I talk about there's two steps to well-being. One is eliminate anything in your life that's causing a problem, that's contributing to that problem. And two, then you have to go through what I call the laws of compensation. To the degree that you've had a problem, you must exceed the damage done in order to reverse it at the DNA level. Just changing a diet will not reverse disease. All it does is slow down the progression of the disease. And that's the confusion in most people's minds. And they just can't, even in scientists' minds, and even in doctors' minds, they just can't understand this principle. That if you were to stop today smoking, but you had smoked for 10 years, sooner or later you will die or develop lung cancer or emphysema, because it's your weak link. And if you were to drink alcohol, even in moderation, by what most people consider moderate amounts, you will end up with a fatty liver or a cirrhosis of the liver or an alcoholic liver. You will also kill neurons and end up with some form of neurological disease or dementia before you otherwise would. So if you stop it, it doesn't change a thing. You have to then reverse it. So you stop smoking and 10 years later you get cancer and go, oh my God, why did I get cancer? I stopped smoking. Oh, I stopped drinking. Not long ago, I counseled, and it just was coincidental, I counseled five separate women in a period of 3 months who were all about 52 to 55 years of age. And they had been seen by their regular doctors. They all were from, let's say, privileged backgrounds financially. That one was a lawyer, another was a professor, another was an architect. And so they had money and resources, and they would go to physicians and be tested. They were told they had were going through menopause, postmenopause, the fatigue, the mood swings, the insomnia, the night sweats were normal. So I simply did a blood test, and I found that every single one of those women suffer from hepatitis C. Their doctors never tested them for viral inflammation. And yet every one of them had nothing in their lifestyle that should have contributed to vitamin C. Oh, except when they were in college and they were engaging in a lot of unhealthy activities, and or when two of them were doing intravenous drug use as when in a part of their life when they were experimenting in college. Oh, and I said, and that's still there today. So what, any time you've done anything earlier in your life, it's still there. Everything in life is accumulative, either constructively or destructively. Everything stays with us and accumulates. So if you save your money, you accumulate it. If you don't create debt, then you accumulate more savings. If you spend more than what you have, you accumulate debt. The more debt you accumulate, the less likely you are to be able to pay it off. And the same way with health. If you do a few healthy things and an awful lot of unhealthy things, you accumulate DNA damage. At a certain point, the body, the organ system, can no longer repair or maintain that level of quality of life, and it tips. So by the time you see it tipping, it could tip as a stroke, or a heart attack, or a cancer, or macular degeneration, or cataracts. So what we have to do is stop with this idea that unless we have some overt clinical symptoms that we are well, we are not. We're all processing our cells towards senescence or programmed cell death. It's just how long will it take us to get there? Now, once you pass the age of 40, for most people, they become aware of their own mortality. At 50, it's a real wake-up call. At 60, it just is like a thunderbolt of consciousness, gee whiz, things are starting to die. Dogs, cats, birds, friends, relatives that you'd hope wouldn't, but now have. And then you realize your own mortality is just ahead. And it's a scary, sickening thought for most people. So then we panic and we either try to deny it, avoid it, but anything and everything we do under stress only increases the speed at which we get there. So now what if we wake up one day and we realize that we cannot do any negative things anymore? We just can't. Instead, we must do not just positive things, but we have to do super positive things. And this is what I call the laws of compensation. Are you watching this on a computer now?
I'm not.
Okay, but if you were, you could see me sitting here in my studio. I've got four big lights on. I have no makeup on, and you'll see I got a really full head of hair. And I have no wrinkles. And these are high-res cameras. Now, that said, the reason that I'm not bald, even though I have male pattern baldness, but all the men in my family, my Uncle Johnny, my Uncle Harold, and my Uncle A.K., and Uncle George, Uncle John, all bald. Uncle Myron, bald. My brother Howard and Steve, bald. My father, bald. That's 10 men in the family, all bald. And I was going bald at 23. I've never smoked, I've never drank, I've never taken drugs, never had any of those, and I'm not judging anyone who has, it's just I didn't want to, so I didn't. But that didn't prevent me from losing my hair, thinning out. And I didn't take hamburgers, hot dogs, and french fries or things. I took vitamin C at high doses. I took a glass of juice every day. I had a good vegetarian diet. It was only by accident when I found out that when I flooded my bloodstream with phytonutrients, phytochemicals, plant-based chemicals, but at much higher doses than what you would ever normally consume, that something happened at the DNA level. And I'll never forget it because I just returned from a tour on one of my best-selling books. And back then we actually toured. And I'll give you an idea of a tour. This tour was for a book where I took me to 22 cities, and someone would pick me up from the publisher's rep, would pick me up at the airport, and then take me to the early morning shows. And then these were relatively short interviews, and I'd go from one interview to another, to a newspaper, to a newsletter, to a magazine, to a radio television. And that's all I did, and a bookstore, a book signing. And late at night, they would take me to an airport, and I'd get the next flight out. My most stops and interviews in one day was in Toronto, 22 separate speaking engagements and interviews in one day, but averaging about 14. You really don't have any time to go eat. There's no place in most of the time for me to even go eat, and these people tend not to know where anything it's healthiest eaten, because in most of these places, it's hamburgers, hot dogs, french fries, that kind of stuff. And on this case, I took a big jar of green vegetable powder. I'd never made it before, but I did on this one occasion from my ranch in Texas at that time. And I just scooped this all day long. And I was taking because it was giving me energy. So I was taking mineral water and like a gallon and a half of water, and just taking a lot of this. And it got me all the energy I wanted. And then when I got back, I'd lost a little weight, because I hadn't had a chance to exercise. And I'm sitting about two nights later, and I'm at my desk over at the Institute of Applied Biology up, and I worked in the evenings, and I had glass wall separating all the animals and my research work from people would come in and ask questions. And every night, people would be there 2, 3, 4 in the morning asking all kinds of questions. They were fascinated to see how I did my experiments. And because I was doing some unusual, not just nutrition experiments, but also I was doing psi experiments, paranormal experiments. In any case, I'm sitting there and I'm taking my hand across my forehead and I suddenly feel something, little tiny bristles. I thought, whoa, what's that? And I went in and I looked with a magnifying glass and in the mirror, and I had new hair growth where I hadn't had hair since I was 15. And I thought, what just happened? And I had to figure it out. I had to do an analysis. And then I didn't remember all the vegetables that were used because I wasn't actually out in the garden. My brother was. He's the one who did the harvesting of this 5 acres because it was the end of the season. If I hadn't harvested it, it was just all gone bad. And then juiced it and dried it and made it into this powder. But over the next 12 months, I was able to recreate this, and it worked on me. And then I did this experiment with some friends that worked with them. And then I also started to see some premature gray that I had going back to natural color. The roots were natural color. And then I did a big experiment. Many people listening right now probably were in that experiment because it was the first experiment of its kind in the United States history. I had 5,000 men and women show up at JFK or Robert F. Kennedy High School over on the east side to start a hair study group. But you had to be bald, thinning, or gray for 7 years in order to get in. And we had a group of physicians there that would measure people's hair, look at it. We had these bright lights because a lot of people were disqualified because I couldn't see and they couldn't see anything was wrong with their hair. So the people who got in the study really had problems. And then over the next 12 months, they followed a particular protocol. And at the end of that time, only about 5% of the people showed a real improvement where they reversed balding and thinning and actually had new natural color hair come out where they were gray in their beard, eyebrows, or in their chest hair, groin hair, or in the top of their head hair. Well, that was not statistically significant. So I felt that the study was a failure. And then about 3 months later, I'm walking down Broadway, and this short fellow comes up, and he says, "Gary, remember me?" And I said, "No, I'm sorry, I don't." He's, "Oh, well, that's all right. I was one of the 1,000 people, actually it was 1,300, that was in your hair study." And he turned down his head and said, "Look at this." And he took his little beret off, and he had this hair all over his head. It wasn't very long, but he had hair. I said, "So what am I looking at?" He said, "I was in that study group." He said, "It didn't work for me, but now it has." And I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, you know, maybe I shouldn't tell you this, but a lot of people, they didn't follow the protocol. We'd go out and have hamburgers afterwards. We were just kind of, it was a great place to socialize and pick up women." I said, "It was supposed to be a study." He said, "Well, what you wanted to be and what all of us were doing were two different things." He said, "None of the people I was hanging with that I met there did your protocol, or they'd only do like the exercise, but no one did all that stuff." All right, so the next week we called all those people back and just asked them, "Did you honestly follow the protocol, yes or no?" And they said no, except for 5%. The 5% that followed the protocol were the ones who had the improvement. So I had to do the whole study all over again. But this time, I changed the whole thing. They had to come in with homework every week. They had to prove that they were doing stuff. I used an impedance test because then I could tell if they were actually exercising. If the percentage of fat didn't go down, they were excluded from the study. And then they had to have a buddy system. Every single person had to communicate with another person they didn't know to keep them on the straight and narrow they were going to do this. Then the results were spectacular. I mean, just nothing less spectacular. And we filmed all that. I have it all on film. Haven't put them all on the web yet, but I'm going to. I have over 3,000 people who have helped change their health that I'm going to put up on the web so people can see this. That allowed me then to say, okay, if I was able to help change the DNA from the message it has into a different message, which, by the way, science says is not possible. So what I did simply had to be rejected, because it wasn't scientifically possible. You can't change your DNA, period. But I did. So then I did it in a different way. I've done what we're just starting now, our 47th clinical trial. But I did another study with women who had menopausal symptoms and severe. And there were 247 women. But it was based upon, if I can change the DNA, in these women, then I should be able, theoretically, to reverse their menopause. And I did. And it's the first time in world history that a study has actually reversed menopause. In fact, it was so important study, it was selected as the lead study to be presented to the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine's American College of American Academy of Anti-Aging meeting in Chicago. Dr. Martin Feldman, who you hear later talking about how to improve your chances if you wish to conceive, was also the medical supervisor of the study. So we got up before 7,000 of the world's leading anti-aging scientists and made the presentation. And they were really fascinated with all this concept. And then I've gone on to help people with arthritis and reverse Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis and all these other conditions using the same identical protocol. And the underlying protocol is that whatever has caused a problem, viral trauma, genetics, infection, you have to reverse it at a level that changes the message to the DNA. And so therefore you have to know how to change to a positive message. And the phytonutrients are a crucial part of that. But the normal amount of phytonutrients you would take in will not reverse it. All that will do is slow down the type of illnesses and the degree to which that illness will manifest itself within a given period of time. But I mean, when I say reversed it, the women who were thinning and balding got their hair back, those who had underactive thyroid, the thyroid corrected, those who had gained weight, lost weight without dieting, those who had mood swings came back to normal positive mood, and those who had lost their period got their period back. Five nurses got their period back, and one had been without a period for 8 years. 8 years. She was 58 years old when she got her period back. So this is some heavy stuff. So even though we had it accepted in a major peer-reviewed journal and it published, and I've done 8 others of these type of studies, different studies and different presentations before the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine, it's all based upon the same principle. And I call it the laws of compensation. To the degree that you have any DNA defect, you must exceed the limitations of the DNA in reprogramming it. And with the energy, and it's the message in the energy that you do that. And I don't have any more time to go into it now. But are you getting a vague notion of what I'm talking about?
I do, Gary. Yes.
Okay. So the whole idea in our society, well, don't do too much. Well, take it easy. Well, you know, stay in bed if you're older. Take a lot of time to recover. Don't stress yourself with exercise. You know, you don't want to be too healthy. You know, don't be doing too much good stuff. I mean, just moderation in all things. All of that is counterintuitive, counterproductive, and non-scientific. It's like Bannister breaking the 4-minute mile. Every single expert said it couldn't be done, and then he did it, and then everyone else did it after that. So what was the only limitation of Bannister doing it? The belief that it could be done. So once you understand what is possible, then it doesn't matter who won't try it because they don't believe it's possible. They are absolutely right. If someone tells you you can't reverse end-stage pancreatic cancer, stage 4, they are right. They can't. But they are wrong. We have. So will they accept what we do? They can't. And that's another thing, Kevin. Don't be angry and don't be disappointed and don't be discouraged by nurses, doctors, and others who say it's not possible to reverse things if they haven't, because they're limited by their belief system. And the belief system has a third rail. And you get electrocuted if you touch it. They must have all their answers in an official, monikered belief system. And so that is why they will never accept any of the good work done by holistic physicians, therapists of any kind. They can't. It would mean then that they would have to challenge the limitations of their own beliefs. So now, that said, start the detoxification. Bring only those foods into your mother's system that are energizing. The fresh organic fruits and vegetables, the juices, probably juicing about 13 glasses of juice a day. The nutrients that are known to impact the immune system and also help with the eyes, like potassium and the carotenoids and lutein and zeaxanthin and copper, manganese, glutathione, grapeseed extract, lysine, pantothenic acid, a B complex, a vitamin C, bilberry extract, ginkgo biloba. All of these are important for the whole body, but you've got to repair the immune system. Get rid of any mercury teeth she has, silver fillings teeth in her body. Get her full examination to make sure she's not carrying any infections in her mouth. Cleanse and detoxify that intestine. All right, and then you should see a big difference from other self. All the best to you, Kevin.
Thank you very much. You too. Thank you.
Let's say hello to Melissa from New Jersey. Hi, Melissa. Melissa, speak up, please. Turn off your radio. You're on the air. Melissa, well, you're going to have to come on board, or we have to take another call. Sorry, she's listening over the radio. All right, let's say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. Want to talk about fertility.
All right.
As you mentioned, detoxifying 1 year before conceiving would be a good idea. That would be a great idea. Very few people understand that. Now, infertility is a big, big problem in America. There are millions of couples who are infertile. A third of the females are the problem. A third of the time it's the female infertility. A third of the time the male is infertile. And the other third is a combination of both factors, but often undiagnosed problems. Who's at risk? Women who have delayed childbearing due to careers, let's say age 40 and on, they're at greater risk for infertility. Smoking increases the risk a great deal, especially of miscarriage. It can also damage the fallopian tubes. Alcohol is associated with increased risk of endometriosis and many other problems of fertility. Being overweight or underweight can impair the fertility process. We have all those background issues. Also, we have structural issues, very, very important, but these can be checked out relatively easily by conventional gynecology obstetrics, such as fallopian tubes, which can be damaged by chlamydia, gonorrhea, or other diseases. And if your tubes are blocked, you can't get the sperm get to the egg. A previous ectopic pregnancy will cause a lot of problems. Previous surgery in the abdomen or pelvis will cause problems. And endometriosis can cause many, many problems. So fibroid tumors especially are a problem. So all these are, those are easy. Those are diagnosable. Regular doctors can do it. That's part of conventional. Here's the part that's not part of conventional. There is a missing factor, which is the key, is to test the progesterone level during the last phase of the pregnancy cycle, such that we want to test your progesterone and your estradiol while you're at it on day 22 of a 28-day cycle, the normal cycle. On day 22, you test your progesterone and your estradiol. Those two are key, progesterone and estradiol. Blood is sort of okay to test, but superior to blood I've found over the years is saliva. Saliva is rarely used by conventional physicians in America, but it's more accurate for progesterone especially. And the key is to know to do it on day 21, day 22 of the cycle. Now let's assume that your progesterone is out of whack, which is a very common issue. Especially your estradiol may also be out of whack, but the progesterone tends to be the one that's more important on many aspects and often overlooked more so than estrogen. What do we do? Well, first step would be natural approach. Black cohosh, dong quai, ginger rhizome, Chinese licorice root. Those are all simple, non-invasive first step to try to repair the progesterone level. Also, have available homeopathic sarcodes. A homeopathic sarcode is a homeopathic remedy which will help the fertility, help the ovarian system, help the hormonal system. Also, I find very often, when there's a fertility issue, the vitamin E and vitamin zinc are low when tested. E and zinc tend to be low with infertility, especially with this progesterone issue. Now, what we do is we use the natural approach first, plus detoxifying is critical, as you mentioned, for many other factors. And then we retest the levels. Saliva levels would be ideal. Blood is sort of okay, but the saliva would be superior. So we see, has the natural approach bring the progesterone level up? If not, then we go on to phase two or phase three, which would be that we go to potentially for bioidentical hormones. Bioidentical hormones are part of alternative medicine, somewhat moving toward traditional, but not very much yet, whereby we have natural bioidentical lozenges, which go under the tongue for progesterone, or creams, which can go on the skin. These are very, very easy to, let's say, to find if you know what the compounding pharmacy to use. And the sublingual ones are a little bit more complex. That is sublingual progesterone or estrogen hormones are actually required in terms of you have to have very high technology to do the sublingual properly. Only a few labs in my few hormonal, let's say, aspects are available through compounding formula. You have to know where to go. Now, the cream, progesterone cream, is actually available over the counter. You could buy progesterone simply over the counter, whereby it's not by prescription. And one of the major brands is called Progest. There are many, many others. Many of them are fine. And 1 teaspoon is roughly 80 milligrams of dose. And that's you can do some of this on your own, but you're much better off to use someone who knows what they're doing regarding the doses and the supply. So this is an area which is unfortunately overlooked. It's very, very simple. We have a natural approach. We have, if need be, phase 2 or 3 might be the bioidentical. Bioidentical are very, very friendly. They're not that expensive. They're very, very, let's say, efficient. And it can be very important for conception, even if at any level for anybody at any time.
Good information, Marty. I appreciate your input. Dr. Martin Feldman, and you can reach him if you want more information at 212-744-4413. And finally, as we go out of our program today, the latest study that come out from a World Economic Forum report shows that the top killer diseases, we're only talking about the top killer diseases, will cost the world in the near future $47 trillion. You heard me right. That's with the T, trillion dollars. Quote, for the first time ever, the UN General Assembly will tackle the issue of non-communicable diseases such as cancer and diabetes and the threat they pose to global health. And then it goes into how many people will be affected by this. And this is in the near future. Quote, the need for immediate action is critical to the future of global economy. So how, in a world that is already stressed and struggling for income and for even basic food supplies and water, clean, usable water, how they're going to end up preventing these diseases? And that's why I believe that at this time, we have to look at not just our own health, but the fact that we have a non-sustainable world that is eating itself to death, eating the wrong foods. This is part of globalization. The colas, the coffee, the sugar, the hamburgers and hot dogs, the more affluent people become, the more they want to be like Americans. Well, take a look at Americans. We're the most obese nation in the world per population. We have more diseases than any other country in the world per population, and we spend more on health care than any other person or family in the world, period. So what's it look like? You've got 500 million Chinese and Indians and Brazilians who now have gone to from the poor working class to the upper working class, middle class. They have the money to buy things, and they want what Americans have. And now traditional diets, which may have been very healthy, are being set aside. And this is causing diabetes at an epidemic level, heart disease, and cancer. And yet, the very same UN and Swiss-based World Economic Forum will not call upon a single progressive person to help solve this. They won't call upon Francis Moore-LePay or Jeffrey Smith, myself, or any of the other people who understand how to reverse diseases, what type of agriculture, what kind of food programs to put in place. Instead, they will go to the very people who created the diseases, the major think tanks, which are just extensions of the major corporate entities, and say, gee whiz, we've got a problem. And in come Bill Gates and in come Warren Buffett and say, they need vaccines, we'll vaccinate them. Or we'll give them genetically engineered food or medicines to treat their diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. They will be exploited, but no one will be protected. No lives will be saved. No diabetes, heart disease, or cancer will be prevented at all. That's what we're facing. Add that on to the list of issues that need addressing. I'm Gary Noll, and I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen to me. Ah!